I'm having trouble trying to sleep. I'm counting sheep but running out. No rest for cross tops in my mind. On my own, here we go.
This is Joe Doze. Like many people, Joe has a lot going on in his life. Joe has never given much thought to his sleep. He would be surprised to know that there are complex and interrelated mechanisms in his body that control when he is awake and change when he sleeps. Sleep allows important changes to occur, which are essential for good health. In adults like Joe, the most natural cycle of sleeping and waking is 16 hours of daytime and evening activity, followed by 8 hours of sleep at night. Cycles of sleep and being awake are controlled by several interrelated behavioral and internal systems. These are represented on the control panel on the right. They include the biological sleep clock. These monitors represent internal controls that allow us to sleep at night and be awake and alert the rest of the day. When these systems are out of balance, our ability to have good sleep may be impaired.
The sleeping pill and breathing seems to unlock a primitive desire to eat in some patients, according to emerging medical case studies that describe how the drug's users sometimes sleepwalk into their kitchens, claw through their refrigerators like animals, and consume calories ranging into the thousands. The next morning, the night eaters remember nothing about their foraging, but they wake up to find telltale clues.
Telltale clues.
Mouthfuls of peanut butter, Tostitos in their beds, kitchen counters overflowing with flour, missing food, and even lighted ovens and stoves. Some are so embarrassed they delay telling anyone, even as they pour out.
These people are hell-bent to eat,
said Dr. Mark Mullowalawa, who is director of the Minnesota Regional Sleep Disorders Center in Minneapolis and is researching the problem. He and colleagues are preparing a scientific paper based on their findings that a sleep-related eating disorder is one of the unusual side effects showing up with the widespread use of Ambien. Researchers at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, have made similar findings. A woman in Salinas, California, whose case is to be included in the Minnesota study, said she would awaken to find candy bar wrappers next to her bed and popsicle sticks on the floor near the refrigerator. She blamed her husband and sons before finally believing their claims that she was eating at night, unaware. Despite seeing several doctors, Ms. Pobre did not link Ambien to her nocturnal eating until after she gained
100 pounds.
100 pounds. 100 pounds. That's 100 pounds. Most of the people who use Ambien say the drug puts them to sleep and they wake up without incident. But several doctors and a number of patients say that sleep eating is one of a variety of unusual reactions to the drug. The reactions range from fairly benign sleepwalking episodes to hallucinations, violent outbursts, and, most troubling of all, driving while asleep. The Food and Drug Administration has said in response to a Times reporter's query that it would monitor the drug's safety record. Dr. Carlos H. Schenck, a sleep disorders expert in Minneapolis and the lead researcher on the study, estimates that thousands of Ambien users in the United States experience sleep-related eating disorders while taking the drug. Often patients with sleep-related eating disorder caused by Ambien realize that they have an eating problem, but do not associate it with the sleeping pill until they find a doctor who is aware of the relationship, Dr. Schenck said. Among sleep eaters, the desire for food can be tremendously powerful. One woman in the Minneapolis area whom Dr. Schenck treated, Judy Evans, said she began taking Ambien while recovering from back surgery. At the time, she was in a full body cast and needed assistance to get out of bed. During this time, Ms. Evans, who is 59 and lives alone, began to notice that food was missing from her refrigerator. She accused two nursing aides who were caring for her of stealing food. It was not until her son came to spend several nights with her that Miss Evans said she realized that despite the body cast, she was getting up to eat while she was asleep. The first night her son was there, he found her standing in the kitchen, body cast and all, frying bacon and eggs. The next night he found her eating a sandwich, Ms. Evans said, and sent her back to bed. Later that same night, her son arose to find her standing in the kitchen again.
I had turned the oven on, she recalled. I store pots and pans in the oven, and I had turned it to 500 degrees.
Another woman who has complained about sleep eating was Helen Carey, a labor and delivery nurse in Dixon, Tennessee, who began taking the drug so she could sleep days while working 12-hour night shifts.
One day, I got up. My husband described this in great detail. I got a package of hamburger buns, and I just tore it open like a grizzly bear and stood there and ate the whole package. He said a couple of things to me, and then I realized I was asleep.
She has switched to working days and no longer takes Ambien.
I really found that the less sleep I got, the more I wanted to eat. I was so hungry, I wanted to eat my pillow.
Struck 12 that fateful night in the town of Boston, Mass. Our forefathers were sound asleep, of course. From beneath their windows came a noise that almost broke the glass. 'Twas a wild-eyed horseman on a breathless horse.
Joe and his family are lucky in that they are all healthy, but they do have occasional problems sleeping. The problems might vary. Sometimes it is with falling asleep. Sometimes it is with waking up. We'll help you learn how to work with your natural body rhythms to achieve this goal.
Guilty as charged. Murder 1.
After
8 hours of deliberation, a Phoenix jury returned this verdict last week in the murder trial of Scott Fallater, an engineer, family man, and Mormon priest. The facts were never in dispute. Fallater killed Yarmila, his wife of 20 years, by stabbing her 44 times with his hunting knife before pushing her into the family pool and holding her head underwater. Fallater also hid the evidence. He wrapped his blood-drenched clothes and boots in a plastic bag, sealed the bag in a Tupperware container, and stashed it in the wheel well of the family Volvo. He changed into pajamas and bandaged his head, which had been cut in the struggle. Case closed, right? No question. Why, then, did the jury deliberate for 8 hours? Scott Fallater claimed he had no memory of any of the events surrounding his wife's death, that he was sleepwalking throughout the bloody event. When the police arrived to take him to jail, Fallater came to realize he was dealing with the homicide division.
Does that mean my wife is dead?
Fallater asked, making him either a tragically bereaved husband or a psychopath with a flair for acting and chutzpah to spare. His attorneys argued that Fallater was trying to fix the pump on the family swimming pool, prying loose a stuck O-ring with his hunting knife while asleep. They argued that he stabbed his wife when she startled him and interrupted his repair task. The defense case was bolstered by a bevy of experts in the field of sleep disorders. Even if Fallater was asleep, didn't he still murder his wife?
Not necessarily.
Although he admitted to killing her, murder requires voluntary actions and the requisite intent. The jury had to decide whether it was possible for a person to stab someone 44 times and hide the evidence, all without waking up. Doing something in one sleep and not remembering the next day is hardly a rarity. Who hasn't reached over to turn off the alarm clock and not remembered it the next day? Sleep researchers estimate that 50% of children sleepwalk at least once. 10 to 15% do so repeatedly. What can a sleepwalker whose brain is not fully in gear accomplish? Sleepwalkers are clearly capable of quite complex tasks. Peter Fenwick, a sleep researcher at London's Institute of Psychiatry, has sleepwalking patients who have ridden horses, made breakfast, stripped wallpaper, and repaired refrigerators. Sleepwalkers can also have conversations.
Disjointed ones.
A quick perusal of back issues of the medical journal Sleep reveals tales that are by turns puzzling, hilarious, and frightening. There are sleep eaters who lose their table manners, waking up with hands slathered in spaghetti sauce or smeared with mayonnaise. One sleepwalking woman favored snacks such as buttered cigarettes and cat food sandwiches. An Italian sleepwalker ate his watch. Not all sleepwalking episodes are chuckle-worthy. Dr. Cleet Kushida, a sleep researcher at Stanford Medical School, estimates a 60 to 70% risk of injury during sleepwalking incidents. A Sydney, Australia hotel is said to have banned sleepwalkers' conventions because of the damage caused by sleepwalking conventioneers. One 14-year-old boy got out of bed and sleepwalked to the kitchen. He sleepwalked out the kitchen door of the family's RV, which was barreling down a San Diego highway at the time. Sleepwalking and sleep talking and sleep eating are clearly real phenomena. But what of violence perpetrated by the sleepwalker, who remembers nothing the next day? Even Scott Fallater told Connie Chung,
"If I had been at home reading this in the paper, it would have seemed like a pretty bizarre and flaky defense to me, too."
Bizarre and flaky, indeed, but not unprecedented. The sleepwalking defense has been raised in 20 to 30 murder trials worldwide. In many, the defendants were acquitted, sometimes by reason of insanity. One of the most interesting cases involved a French detective who killed a man while on vacation. Called upon to help solve the crime, he produced definitive evidence that he himself had committed the murder while asleep. When attackers are sleeping, they really seem to go at it. In the early 80s, another Arizona case involved a man who stabbed his wife 26 times. Just last month, the Canadian Supreme Court upheld the 7-year sentence of a man from British Columbia who stabbed his wife 47 times. He hid the body, grabbed some money and a change of clothes, and flew to Mexico, where he claimed he woke up. To establish that Scott Fallater had been sleepwalking during the brutal slaying, the defense trotted out a string of experts. The leading defense expert was Dr. Roger Broughton, a professor of neurology, director of the Sleep Disorders Clinic at the University of Ottawa, and a winner of the Lifetime Achievement Award from the American Sleep Disorders Association. He had only testified in one previous criminal case, but it was a doozy. In May 1987, Kenneth Parks of suburban Toronto arose from his couch, where he had fallen asleep watching Saturday Night Live. He got in his car and drove 14 miles to the home of his in-laws, where he proceeded to pummel his father-in-law into unconsciousness and kill his mother-in-law, beating her with a tire iron and stabbing her 5 times. Parks was acquitted, and Broughton got another line on his CV.
Homicidal somnambulism, a case report.
Broughton was unflappable on the stand in the Fallater case. Although he admitted that some of Fallater's actions gave him pause, he concluded after reviewing the complete record that sleepwalking was by far the most probable explanation for Scott Fallater's actions the night of January 16, 1997. The defense experts went to great lengths to portray Fallater as someone incapable of waking violence.
He's kind of nerdy,
testified Fallater's daughter, Megan. Fallater's parents and sisters testified that he had sleepwalked as a child. Colleagues testified about stress at work, which could have helped precipitate sleepwalking. The jurors betrayed considerable skepticism regarding sleep research as a discipline. In questions permitted during the trial, one juror asked whether the study of sleep disorders relied more on speculation than on science. At a press conference following the announcement of the verdict, jurors keyed in on the actions of Fallater they thought too complex and purposeful to be those of a sleepwalker.
Why wasn't he jarred awake by his wife's screams? How could he have carefully put a bandage on his left right hand, being right-handed? Why did he need a hunting knife to fix the quill? How could he have sleepwalked for 45 minutes?
A period defense experts acknowledged was exceedingly long. According to Malawala, medical expertise does not allow for a definitive answer in cases like Fallater's. Sleep studies can prove someone is a sleepwalker, as is 9% of the adult population, but that is only part one of a two-part question. The second question is whether he was sleepwalking on the night of the murder.
Only the sad man can answer that.
Today is the last day that I'm using words. They're gone. Try to forget, I'll never explain again.
Joe's daughter Minnie, like other teenagers, needs about 9 to 9.5 hours of sleep every night. Many teens have natural changes in their biological sleep clock. Unfortunately, she needs to get up at 6:30 a.m. to get to school on time.
Sleeping sickness is an infectious parasitic disease carried by tsetse flies and characterized by inflammation of the brain and the covering of the brain. After a person has been bitten by an infected fly, a red painful swelling develops at the site of the fly bite, similar to that seen in Chagas disease. From this site, the parasite infects the bloodstream, causing episodes of fever, headache, sweating, and generalized enlargement of the lymph nodes. Parasites then invade the central nervous system, where they produce the symptoms typical of sleeping sickness. Ultimately, the parasites invade the brain, first causing behavioral changes such as fear and mood swings, followed by headache, fever, and weakness. Simultaneously, the patient may develop myocarditis. Without treatment, death may occur within 6 months from cardiac failure or from the infection itself. Some infected people develop drowsiness during the day, but insomnia at night. Sleep becomes uncontrollable as the patient progresses until the patient becomes comatose. Risk factors include living in those parts of Africa where the disease is found and being bitten by tsetse flies. The incidence is extremely low in the U.S. It is only found in travelers who have visited or lived in those African areas. Untreated infection is almost universally fatal. Call your healthcare provider if symptoms of this disorder develop. It is important to begin treatment as soon as possible.
Do you eat, sleep, do you breathe me anymore? Do you sleep, do you count sheep anymore? Do you sleep anymore? Fall gracefully into bed anymore.
Like many adults, Joe's daily activities and work schedule often interfere with his ability to get adequate sleep. He often feels sleepy during quiet times of the day. Most adults need 7 to 9 hours of sleep every night to feel their best.
Various uncommon disruptive sleep-related disorders. They are intense, infrequent acts that occur during sleep. Some common parasomnias include sleepwalking, sleep talking, sleep terrors, nightmares, and teeth grinding. Sleepwalking, also called somnambulism, is when a person is able to perform complicated actions, including walking, while in deep sleep. Sleepwalking is an arousal disorder. These occur when a person is in a mixed state of awareness, both asleep and awake. Researchers believe sleepwalking stems from a temporary sleep mechanism malfunction that occurs during the deeper stages of sleep. Because sleepwalking does not occur during REM sleep, a sleepwalker is not acting out a dream. Sleepwalking behavior can range from sitting upright in bed to driving a car a long distance. The sleepwalker is awake just enough to be active, but still asleep enough to be unaware of the activity. Sleepwalkers are usually unable to remember the activity. Most sleepwalkers appear awake, with their eyes wide open and dilated. He or she will not respond if spoken to. In some cases, sleepwalking is sometimes associated with incoherent sleep talking. Injuries to the sleepwalker during such events are common, and simple precautions like shutting doors and windows can enhance safety. Sleepwalkers are not easily awakened. If awoken, the sleepwalker will be disoriented and agitated. The best advice is to direct the person back to bed or to a closer location to lie down. Do not inhibit the motion or movement of a sleepwalker, as they have been known to react violently to being detained. Researchers estimate about 18% of the population is prone to sleepwalking. It typically occurs around the onset of puberty and subsides a short time thereafter. This parasomnia tends to run in families and rarely indicates any serious underlying medical problem. Sleep talking. Occasionally, a person may shout out a word or two of gibberish or even recite an entire speech during their sleep. Sleep talking that occurs during REM sleep is understandable, while talking in stage 2 sleep is usually garbled. Sleep talking, or somniloquy, is harmless and usually temporary. The sleeper usually has no memory of their action, and it does not affect sleep. Sleep terrors. Sleep terrors, also called pavor nocturnus, or night terrors, are the most extreme and dramatic of the parasomnias. This disorder is marked by a sudden arousal and a piercing scream or shouting. The person who has a sleep terror will have signs of intense fear, such as wide eyes with dilated pupils, racing heart, sweating, and rapid breathing. It is not uncommon for a person experiencing a sleep terror to jump out of bed, run around agitated, or hurt themselves and others. Fighting is also common and may result in harm to the sleeper or bed partner. Episodes usually occur during the first hour of falling asleep, the point at which deep sleep begins, and lasts about 15 minutes. After the episode, the person returns to sleep, unable to remember the incident in the morning because he or she was never fully awake. A sleep terror patient does not usually experience vivid dream images, but may recall fragments or images of a scene. Sleep terrors usually occur during stage 3 or 4 sleep, the deepest stages of sleep, and children have more deep sleep than adults. Therefore, like sleepwalking, sleep terrors are more common in children. They are also more prevalent in boys. Only 1 to 6% of children between the ages of 4 and 12 experience sleep terrors. Sleep terrors typically do not continue into adulthood. Children experiencing a sleep terror may have a strange expression on their face. They are typically unresponsive to their own environment. This also includes any comfort that may be offered. In fact, attempting to reassure or calm the child down often results in increased agitation. For children and adults, sleep terrors can be the result of stress, psychological disturbance, or sleep deprivation. Sleeping in a different bed may also trigger episodes of sleep terrors. For children under 6 years of age, occasional sleep terrors usually do not require treatment. In contrast, sleep terrors in adults are serious and abnormal. It is usually indicative of excessive agitation or sleep deprivation, depression, or anxiety. Sleep terrors have also been associated with post-traumatic stress disorder. It is highly recommended that an adult who has sleep terrors see a sleep specialist. Sleep specialists term a bad dream a nightmare if the sleeper is aroused from REM sleep and can recall the dream, often in great detail. A nightmare is composed of a very vivid and frightening dream. Common themes include another person assaulting, attacking, or chasing the person having the dream. Nightmares are not associated with bodily reactions such as increased heart rate, faster breathing, or sweating. They occur mainly in REM sleep and consequently late during the sleep cycle in the last third of the night. Nightmares are normal in children and adults. They are indicative of an unresolved issue or a psychological problem that still troubles the individual, such as what to do if attacked. When the problem is solved, the nightmare disappears. For young children, having a parent reassure and comfort him or her after a nightmare is helpful in establishing the dream as not real. Some children will want to discuss the dream, while others may be fearful at bedtime because of a prior nightmare.
Teeth grinding.
Grinding of teeth is a common nighttime occurrence. In fact, 80 to 90% of children and adults grind or clench their teeth during sleep. It is more common in children. Chronic teeth grinding, however, occurs in less than 5% of adults. Most teeth grinders are unaware of their parasomnia. A bed partner who is awakened to the noise or a dentist who finds teeth with excessive wear more often reports it. Patients may complain of a sore jaw, headaches, or frequent awakenings. Chronic teeth grinding can lead to dental damage or injury. There is little evidence to suggest that teeth grinding is associated with any medical or psychological problem. It may be related to stress and uneven alignment of the teeth and jaw.
Many older people have few or no problems sleeping. He feels sleepy, even though it is actually only 8 p.m. Grandpa's body temperature is dropping, which also makes it easier to fall asleep.
Teaching English in Spain last year, I got to watch firsthand how the traditional siesta is getting phased out of most city dwellers' lives. Every afternoon, I travel to different businesses around Madrid. I had conversation classes with corporate stockbrokers, financial analysts, and secretaries. Most of my classes met between 2 and 5 p.m., smack dab in the middle of the siesta. Jorge, one of my students, quickly dispelled any myths I had about the siesta as we slammed back our second round of espresso. Children take naps every day, he told me, not adults. Usually on the weekends, you have a big lunch and siesta with the family, he said. But not during the week, no one has the time. For centuries in Spain and Latin America, heading home for lunch and a snooze with the family was something like a national right. But with the ubiquity of global capitalism standardizing work hours, this idyllic habit is fast becoming an endangered pleasure. Ironically, all this is happening just as researchers are beginning to note the health benefits of the afternoon nap. According to a nationwide survey, less than 25% of Spaniards still enjoy siestas. And like Spain, much of Latin America has adopted Americanized work schedules too, with shortened lunch times and more rigid work hours. Last year, the Mexican government passed a law limiting lunch breaks to 1 hour and requiring its employees to work their 8-hour shift between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. Before the mandate, workers would break up the shift, going home midday for a long break with the family and returning to work until about 9 or 10 p.m. The idea of siesta is changing in Greece, Italy, and Portugal too, as they rush to join their more, quote, industrious, unquote, counterparts in the global market. Most Americans I know covet sleep, but the idea of taking a nap mid-afternoon equates with laziness, unemployment, and general sneakiness. Yet, according to a national sleep survey poll, 65% of adults do not get enough sleep. Numerous scientific studies document the benefits of nap-taking, including one 1997 study on the deleterious effects of sleep deprivation in the journal Internal Medicine. The researchers found that fatigue harms not only marital and social relations, but worker productivity. According to Mark Roskin, a former NASA scientist and founder of Alertness Solutions in Cupertino, California, which educates businesses about the advantages of sanctioning naps, we are biologically programmed to get sleepy between 3 and 5 p.m. and 3 and 5 a.m. Our internal timekeeper, called the circadian clock, operates on a 24-hour rotation, and every 12 hours there is a dip. Roskin recommends that naps be either for 40 minutes or for 2 hours. 40 minutes keeps you in non-REM sleep, the physical restoration part of the cycle, and 2 hours lets you go into a more complete rotation of non-REM and REM. REM sleep, in simple terms, is when our mental repair takes place and when we usually dream. During the night, REM and non-REM alternate in more or less 90-minute cycles. Napping anywhere in between cuts into the two loops, so it's better to stop the cycle before it starts, after 40 minutes, or let it run its course 2 hours. Latin American countries, asserts Roskin, have had it right all along. They've been in sync with their clocks. We haven't. Since most of the world is sleep-deprived, getting well under the recommended 8 hours a night, we usually operate on a kind of idle midday. Naps are even more useful now that most of us forfeit sleep because of insane work schedules, longer commute times, and stress. In a study published last April, Brazilian medical researchers noted that blood pressure dropped during a siesta. Is napping always a good idea? Not according to Cleek Kashida, a neurologist at the Sleep Disorders Clinic at Stanford. He emphasizes that irregular napping can indicate a sleep disorder, from excessive daytime sleepiness to narcolepsy. In the case of high-risk situations like highway driving with extreme fatigue, Kashida agrees that naps can be a good idea, but he does not recommend intermittent shut-eye in the middle of the day because it can interfere with nighttime sleep. Sleep technician Terry Quinozas from the Stanford Sleep Disorders Clinic agrees that napping can indicate underlying disorders, but she also advocates Roskin's theories. Naps, she says, are essentially restorative. Think of sleep like a bank, she says, using one of her colleagues' metaphors. You have withdrawals and deposits. When you take too much out, there's a deficit. It's the same with sleep. During his 7 years at NASA, Rosen conducted a litmus test for NAPS. He surveyed the effects a 40-minute snooze had on pilots and astronauts. He found there was a 34% improvement in performance and a 100% improvement in alertness. British Airways recognized the genius in this program and sanctioned NAPS for pilots. Beyond the obvious safety implications for airlines, doing something halfway in any job costs money because you have to do it over again. U.S. companies lose about $18 billion a year because employees aren't functioning at their best, according to Sleep Foundation statistics. So while the idea of employees sleeping on the job is not attractive to most employers, instituting nap time could save them money.
Grandpa Dose has started drinking alcohol in the evening to help him sleep better. Drinking alcohol in the evening can cause fragmented sleep and increase snoring and sleep apnea.
When you speak with your doctor, he may recommend that you go to a sleep lab for a sleep examination. This video will give you an idea of what you can expect in your sleep lab experience. If everyone slept well each night, there would be little reason for sleep labs and sleep studies. Unfortunately, sleep disorders that can dramatically impact our health and well-being are quite common. Your doctor has recommended that you have a sleep study so that any problems can be identified and treated in the most effective manner. Sleep studies are comfortable experiences that can be quite interesting if you know a bit about what's going on. This video will give you an idea of what you can expect in your sleep lab experience. Sleep studies are done by sleep technicians, or sleep techs. The CPAP machine as treatment. CPAP is the most effective and widely accepted treatment for sleep apnea. Adjusting to your CPAP machine can be challenging, but you are not alone. CPAPtalk.com is an online CPAP community that provides information and support for CPAP users. If you would like help from people who have already adjusted successfully to CPAP treatment, please visit CPAPtalk.com today.
I tell you how I feel, but you don't care. I say tell me the truth, but you don't dare. You say love is a hell you cannot bear. And I say give me my back and then go there for all I care. I got my feet on the ground and I don't go. My own hell to raise.
Narcolepsy is a frequent disorder. It is the second leading cause of excessive daytime sleepiness diagnosed by sleep centers. Studies on the epidemiology of narcolepsy show an incidence of 0.2 to 1.6 per 1,000 in European countries, Japan, and the United States, a frequency at least as large as that of multiple sclerosis. In many cases, however, diagnosis is not made until many years after the onset of symptoms. This is often due to the fact that patients consult a physician after many years of excessive sleepiness, assuming that sleepiness is not indicative of a disease. Narcolepsy is a very disabling and underdiagnosed illness. The effect of narcolepsy on its victims is devastating. Studies have shown that even treated narcoleptic patients are often markedly psychosocially impaired in the areas of work, leisure, interpersonal relations, and are more prone to accidents. These effects are even more severe than the well-documented deleterious effects of epilepsy when similar criteria are used for comparison. The large majority of narcoleptic patients in this country are still undiagnosed, and narcoleptic subjects are most often diagnosed only after many years of struggle. In one recent study, the mean number of years between the onset of symptoms and the correct diagnosis was 14 years. Since the symptoms of narcolepsy usually appear during adolescence, this means that most narcoleptic patients are diagnosed too late to prevent the dramatic impact of the disease on their personal and professional development. The main symptoms of narcolepsy are excessive daytime sleepiness and abnormal REM sleep. Narcolepsy is not only a serious and common medical problem, it also offers basic sleep researchers a unique opportunity to gather new information on the central mechanisms regulating REM sleep and alertness. Since the 1960s, it has been known that several of the disabling symptoms of narcolepsy, such as sleep paralysis, cataplexy, and hypnagogic hallucinations, are pathological equivalents of REM sleep. In sleep paralysis, a frightening symptom considered to be an abnormal episode of REM sleep, the patient suddenly finds himself unable to move for a few minutes, most often upon falling asleep or waking up. During hypnagogic hallucinations, patients experience dreamlike auditory or visual hallucinations while dozing or falling asleep. Cataplexy, a pathological equivalent of REM sleep atonia unique to narcolepsy, epilepsy is a striking, sudden episode of muscle weakness triggered by emotions. Typically, the patient's knees buckle and may give way upon laughing, elation, surprise, or anger. In other cataplectic attacks, the head may drop or the jaw may become slack. In severe cases, the patient might fall down and become completely paralyzed for a few seconds to several minutes. Reflexes are abolished during the attack.
Has been the Ed Shep Radio Experiment. Thank you for listening and tune in next week. This is Ed Shep signing off.
You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.